2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
It's Tuesday, the 13th of July. Coming up on Game On tonight, we have the FAI Cup first round draw live after 6:30.
Another win for Stephen Kenny, remarkable manager. And now, the FAI Cup winners for 2015 are Dundalk. And celebration time for the Lily Whites.
Dundalk took a 4-goal lead across the Irish Sea today for their second leg clash in the Europa Conference League against Newtown. Paul Corrie is in studio to keep an eye on their progress for us.
Plus, we'll talk lines at Rory Best as the tour gets serious.
Watson to Liam Williams, good step. We need some support.
Oh, maybe, maybe not. Liam Williams looking all around. Where's that support now? It's come from Jonathan Davis. Now, Elliot Daly. Show those wheels. Inside to Davis. Inside and out. It's got to be finished. It is finished. Sean O'Brien.
John McHenry looks ahead to the 149th Open at Royal St. George.
In Ireland's Shane Lowry is an Open champion at Royal Portrush.
If you want to get in touch, please do so. You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game on 2FM.
Now, as we mentioned at the very top of the show, Paul Corrie is in studio with us. He's keeping an eye on Newtown and Dundalk. Dundalk have a very comfortable cushion heading into this game. You'd have to think, Paul, that they're going to wrap it up pretty quickly.
Yeah, you'd imagine so, Marie, that they've done enough in the first leg to see them through to the next round. And for Dundalk and for Vinnie Perth, it's trying to get some consistency into their performances and the results, and trying to maybe get a stable 11 players that he can work with, that he can field in the next round and in the league too. So no problems to date so far this evening. He's actually gone with the same 11 as he went with last week, and that for me is probably a good sign, and maybe this is the team that he's going to lean on in the next round in Europe. And they've still got some serious pedigree within their squad and great European experience in the likes of Andy Boyle and Dave McMillan, so they've definitely the players to go far in this competition. They've got a favourable draw in the next round, so through tonight, hopefully no injuries picked up, a good performance is exactly what Vinnie Perth be asking for.
Yeah, and Vinny will really want to go far in Europe after everything that's happened in the last year, and especially that he was so close to managing them when they went on the European run last season.
100%, and the owners, listen, took over because they wanted to go far in Europe, and they saw that as potentially a source of revenue and a source of finance for the club, and they probably desperately need it because they've invested heavily in that squad, and the players that they've brought in, the likes of your Drakovskis and your Nadestad, they've been brought in for occasions like this, so you know, it might be a welcome distraction from the league. It's no hidden, I guess, or no, you can't hide away from the league form, and this might be a welcome break from the league, and if they can put together a good performance tonight and bring that into the next round, I could see them going through at least the first two rounds.
With a bit of luck, they will. But Paul, UEFA have opened an investigation into events at Wembley. They relate to disturbances caused during the national anthems, invasion of the pitch, the throwing of objects, and the lighting of a firework by fans. But separately, a UEFA ethics and disciplinary inspector has been appointed to conduct a disciplinary investigation into events involving supporters which occurred inside and around the stadium. The whole thing is a bit of a mess, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And listen, everybody, I'm sure, has seen the videos circulating on social media before the game, during the game, and some of that after the game, and it's it was out of control. I think that's the only way of putting it, Ruby, and people maybe getting too involved in the occasion, and then also too many people trying to force their way into the ground. I was at the Champions League final in Portugal, and there was only a percentage of fans in the stadium, but you could probably relate to some of the scenes with the fans pre-match. You could certainly see that evident in the Champions League final as well. I don't know if it's the English culture. I don't know if it was the fact that they were, I guess, partying a bit too hard before the game, but it's not acceptable. And I think it's right that it should be punished in some way, shape or form.
Yeah, and more stories are actually coming out over the last 24 hours of different people, and how they were attacked and injured and mugged, and it's just, it's almost nearly getting worse as the time goes on, and with the 2030 bid looming as well, the timing couldn't be any worse.
Yeah, terrible. And listen, you could actually read certain stories where some of the players' families were involved, and people nearly trying to have their tickets taken off them or barged or stamped upon. And you know, I played for Sheffield Wednesday. The Hillsborough disaster is something that's still very close to a lot of people's hearts in Sheffield, and that for me kind of, it brought me back to scenes that you'd seen in Hillsborough with the crushing and the overcrowding, and that's absolutely not what England need if they're going to be putting themselves forward for World Cup bid. But why it wasn't policed more, you would have to question, because everybody knew it was going to be a huge occasion in London. Wembley, by nature, there's actually a lot of residential space. There's not a huge amount of room for fans to actually congregate in. So it should have been better policed. It just should have been more stewards. There should have been more safety checks. So huge question marks there, but it's something that can't go under the radar.
Yeah,
it's
that's
not
for sure.
Possible for UEFA to give them the World Cup, is it?
I don't know. I mean, they've got the stadia there to host a major tournament, but you would have to wonder, have they, you know, behaviours of fans down through the years hasn't exactly been great, and on the biggest occasion that they've had over the last number of years, they've mismanaged it. So should they then be given the responsibility of running a major tournament? Probably not. Now, we're talking about a minority. The majority of fans who go to the game are well behaved. The majority of fans are not engaging in this behaviour, but it only takes a couple to ruin it, and they could potentially ruin what could be a momentous occasion if they were to host a World Cup.
Well, the thing is, you can debate many of the decisions that FIFA and UEFA have made over the last few years and where major tournaments have gone, and also just even the format of the Euros was one that I think raised quite a lot of eyebrows. And Paul, before we move on from the football, we will have the draw at 6:30, but Shamrock Rovers are also in action tonight. They face a much stiffer challenge than Dundalk. They are playing Slovan Bratislava, and they lost 2-0 from the first leg, so they'd really have to get an early goal, you'd think.
Yeah, we'll be hopeful for them, and everybody will be behind them, because we want to see Irish teams go far in European competitions, but this is a really stiff challenge. On the balance of play, there wasn't a huge amount between the two teams last week, and you tend to find that in European competitions, that when we play, particularly in the Champions League, it's both teams, you weigh them up, and the European teams tend to be a bit more clinical in both boxes, and they tend to be a bit more aggressive with their possession and a bit more clinical in the final third in particular, and that was the case last week. Like you mentioned, Marie, if they are to have any opportunity, they're going to have to score the first goal. I would probably keep it tight for the first half at least, because if you come out against these oppositions, they just play around you. So it's really difficult one for them tonight. He might mix up and change the formation and maybe some of the personnel to try get a bit more of a foothold in the game, but personally I think it's just too much to recover from a 2-0 deficit in the first leg. The good news is there's no away goals, so if Bratislava do score, it won't really affect things too much.
But the bad news is, at 6:30, you could give them an awful draw in the FAI Cup, wouldn't you?
I've a few friends still out in Tala and dotted around the league, so if I do pull out a bad draw, I'll certainly be hearing off the back of it later on.
Well, the one good thing for them is that it is at home. There are going to be fans there, and they can only really improve, you would think, on their last performance as well. So we might get a bit of team news before the hour is over. We'll be keeping an eye on it. There is just over 20 minutes gone in Wales, and still nil all between Dundalk and Newtown. We're going to take a very quick break, and then we're going to chat to Rory Best about the Lions.
Have your dinner ready in a flash with Green Farm's new high-protein cooked chicken breast fillets. Available in selected stores nationwide.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back to Game On. Rory Best has joined us on the line. 124 caps for Ireland. Dunica got it wrong. Did I get it right, Rory Best?
You certainly did. Never a doubt.
Wikipedia, it's an incredible thing, isn't it? If only donors could use it. But anyway, Rory, great to have you on. Look, the Lions have had four games so far in their test, in their series, not tests obviously, and have won all four impressively, but this Saturday they face the South Africa A team. Is this possibly the strongest team any Lions side has faced in a warm-up game?
I think it's very close to it. 4 years ago, the New Zealand teams, they kept up most of their All Blacks in there, in the provincial sides, which kept them very strong. But this is very, very close to a full South African side. I think it's actually the first time when the Lions sort of left and they played Japan, and you tried your best to get excited, but the games leading up to this really haven't got you that excited. No crowds there, the one-sided scorelines, but this is the first time you've seen these teams announced and you've went, right, okay, now we'll see, this is the proper... Well, it is, it's very close to a fourth test, this, and I think it'll be really interesting to see not just where the Lions are, but where South Africa are as well.
So they've gone with Faf de Klerk, Chazen Coblie. They've also Morin Stein in there. Why are they going for such a strong team for this game? What's the thinking behind it?
Well, I think they haven't played... They've played Georgia once since the World Cup in the very start of November 19. They had the Georgia game cancelled, which would have been, Friday night. And I think that, especially now with Razi Erasmus has kind of taken over a little bit because Jacques Nienaber is isolating. I'm sure he's very much in contact, but I think that they feel they're undercooked. I think that's the Lions' big strength at the minute against them, is that the Lions will have played games together. They'll be getting better the more they play. They've played a lot of rugby with the club sides of various teams, and I think that this is why Razi Erasmus has picked this team, because he needs to make sure that when they get to that first test and a week and a half time, that they are battle-hardened, because it is going to be a battle. And I think it's really, really interesting. I would have expected a few of these guys to play, but when you look at it, you know, when there's sort of six, seven of the starting team from the World Cup final playing tomorrow night, it's going to be brilliant.
How far do you think they're off their best starting team with this one?
I think that they're probably not that far off it. When you look at, you know, obviously they've had a few retirements since the World Cup. So someone like Stephen Kitchell, I'm sure at Loosehead, will expect to start with the Beast retiring. The second rows, Mustat was in the World Cup squad. You know, Malcolm Marks is on the bench. He was in the World Cup squad. So I think that they're probably very close. And I think that this is no doubt, it's the core of their team. These are the guys that they'll want to see being big players for them. The back row, you would imagine, is going to... Khaleesi and Vermeulen, you would imagine, are going to come in alongside the toy. But I think, by and large, this looks very much like the spine of the team, especially in the back line with the centres, Colby and LaRue, all playing. So I think he knows that they need to get on the front foot. And it's no surprise that he also offered to play again on Saturday with the South Africa side. And it also didn't shock me that Warren Gatland said no to it, because why would he give them more game time whenever that could potentially be the Lions' trump card?
Trump card being the Lions have had five games together against pretty weak opposition. Is there a counter argument to that maybe Warren could have went with a change squad on Saturday and tested a few more players to pick his test side from?
I think he probably weighed it up against giving South Africa another game, and he's probably factored in and thought, we have five games, yes, against weak opposition. And I think the fact he'll be happy now that he's got this one game, because what, 8 years ago in Australia did what South Africa had to do because of COVID, and they pulled all their internationals out of the provincial sides, and it was very one-sided. And that first test, it was almost, you could see the breath going out of the Lions, because they weren't ready for this. They weren't expecting it. Whereas now I think Warren will be a little bit happier that he'll have this big game tomorrow night. It'll basically give him another game on Saturday to have a look at a few more combinations, to give guys like maybe Robbie Henshaw, Owen Farrell, these guys that maybe weren't 100% for tomorrow night, to give them a last chance to put their hand up and to go, right, we'll have at least one really proper battle-hardened game and we can run in with it. And whereas South Africa, I still think that he'll feel, regardless of the weak opposition the Lions have had, that they will have an upper hand of just sheer match minutes.
The Ireland under-20s are currently in action against France in their final game of the Six Nations. They are trailing France 23-31. England were crowned Six Nations, or they won the Grand Slam a little bit earlier when they beat Italy. And just on the fact that it is going to be, we hope anyway, a very competitive game against South Africa, when you consider just the last few weeks and how difficult it has been, it does feel like it is low key. There isn't a huge amount of hype around it. They kind of need a really competitive game to make a bit of a splash and to draw a little bit more of attention to it, Rory.
Yeah, they do. Like I said at the start, it has been very difficult sort of watching these games, and you could nearly switch it off after 20 minutes. Okay, the game at the last game they played after 20 minutes, it was quite close, but you know, the Lions have looked good, but it's been against weak opposition. But it has really been tough to watch at times because there's no crowd, there's no atmosphere. So yeah, this game, it actually has come at the right time. You know, there'll be sort of 10 days leading into the first test. Now this will give a flavour for whichever team doesn't win tomorrow night. Will be, you'll be expecting a backlash. Whatever team wins, they'll go in with a little bit of confidence, and it will generate some hype, and it will give you a good indication of where all the players are. I think the test team is incredibly hard to pick for the Lions now because, you know, everyone has played quite well. No one's played badly, but no one's really had the opportunity to go, this is a big game and I've put my hand up, and tomorrow night is that opportunity.
The Irish contingent have been doing pretty well. As you said, no one has played bad, but obviously when Warren Gatland handed Conor Murray the captaincy, that kind of put him in the test team, and tomorrow night's a big night for himself and Dan Biggar with the injuries to Owen Farrell and Finn Russell. This looks like the 9 and 10 combo.
I think it is, and I think that was probably a big part of the decision with Conor as captain. It's not something that he's necessarily renowned for, but you know what he is? He's a world-class player. I feel that he's guaranteed of a spot, barring injury. And he is really, really well-liked. And there's a lot of leaders around that squad that'll all want to get behind him. And it's a fantastic honour for him, and I was delighted for him. And I really hope it goes well for him personally tomorrow night, because I think to go on your third Lions tour is an incredible achievement. And it'll be great for him. And that partnership with Dan Biggar, I think there are a few players that are sort of, you feel at the minute, are in the test side if they play well tomorrow night. And I think Dan Biggar is very much probably leading that pack of players that they just need another game to play well, another game to go, yeah, they have now cemented their place in there.
You'd also like it to go really well for Conor from the leadership point of view, as because the fact that Alan Wynne-Jones could potentially be returning. He was to do a double training session today, and then depending how that went, a decision would be made whether or not to fly him back to South Africa.
Yeah, and hopefully that goes well for him. I think when you saw him leaving the pitch against Japan and Murrayfield, you kind of went, it doesn't look good. When somebody like him walks off the pitch, it's never a great thing. Looking the way he did, and when you heard the prognosis, you sort of went, that's such a pity to have that honour and to not get to follow through with it. But whenever there was rumours that there was a glimmer of hope, he also thought if any man can sort of produce some sort of miracle recovery, it's him. His mental fortitude is second to none, and that's why he's played at the top level for so long. And I think it'll be a massive boost for the Lions if he was back out. I still wouldn't envisage him starting in the first test regardless. I think there's a lot of ground to make up. And in second row with Atoje and Henderson, I think they've been two of the sort of better players for the Lions anyway, and I think they deserve to start. But to have someone like Alan Wynne-Jones in the squad on the bench would be a massive thing. So it would also be a massive help for Conor. You know, I think when you're a reasonably new captain, the more leaders and the more captain, and especially the sort of guys like Owen Farrell and Alan Wynne-Jones, who are very selfless as captains, the better it is for a player like Conor.
And Ruby, 3 weeks ago he dislocated his shoulder. How impressive is it even that he's able to do a double training session with his international team today?
He obviously got put back in quite quickly, Marie, and that is the key to it. I did that quite a number of occasions myself.
I figured you would.
Dislocated on a Friday in Newbury Road on Saturday. But it's how quickly it goes back in. And the range of movement then is not great, and how stable it is, that'll be... I don't know how much they will have tested it, but how much of a hit it's going to stand up to before it comes back out. That's more to do with it. The only way of solving that is actually to stitch it back in, and that's a 4-month operation, which I doubt he was going to do right now or at his age of his career. But Rory, moving on from that, Bundyaki was a kind of a surprise inclusion for many, considering he hadn't been a starter on the Irish team, yet he's the only player to have been involved in all of the four games so far. He's on the bench again tomorrow night, or actually starting again tomorrow night. Could he have played his way into Warren Gatland's team?
I think he has, and I think he was a surprise inclusion, but when you looked at it and you look at the way Warren Gatland likes to play, he likes that type of player. You know, guys that are big and powerful but good on their feet but can also play a bit of ball. And I think the way he's played, I think that he is really, and there's been a little bit of fortune for him as well. He's played really well. But with Owen Farrell sort of not having much game time at 12, Robbie Henshaw unfortunately hasn't played since the Japan game. He's got this run, and I think that when you go on Lions tours or in any team, that you want an opportunity, and then when you get that opportunity, you want chance to cement that. And he's been slightly fortunate that he's got that, but he's also taken it with both hands. And if he, I think he's another player that if he has a big game tomorrow night, I would imagine he'll start in the first test.
What do you think of Warren Gatland's decision to call up 22-year-old Marcus Smith as out half cover for injured Finn Russell and to overlook Johnny Sexton?
I wouldn't be in favour of it at all. I've heard some of the commentary around it and some of the pundits sort of saying that, oh, what an opportunity to bring in young guys, and it's what the land's about, you know, developing as people. And I actually, my opinion wouldn't be further away from that. I think that the Lions is such a special honour that you pick the best players and the best players available to you. And I was surprised that Johnny was omitted in the first place, and was even more shocked, and actually was bordering on angry whenever I saw that Johnny hadn't been called up. And that if there's other reasons around he wasn't in bubbles and bits and pieces, I think these players that would be next in line should have been told that, look, we need you to stay in some kind of bubble or in the training bubble or whatever it is to make yourself available, because there'd be very few players that I would know that wouldn't have kept themselves in that sort of some sort of biosecurity to make sure that they were available. And the guy was really gutted for Johnny not to get the call, because there's no doubt that I probably should have went in the first place, but when he didn't, he certainly was the next best I'd have to go.
I couldn't agree more with you. I thought he didn't go because of the potential for injury, but when your other guys got injured, I just can't understand how you leave him at home, but he has done. The other Irish players, Rory, has Ty Byrne, he was great against Japan, good against the Sharks. Jack Cohen has made the most of his opportunities. Tadhg Furlong, look, I'm no professional, but I would have had him in my 15. How many more of them can you see getting in?
I think that certainly Tadhg Furlong will definitely start. I'd say that he's just not involved. He's now in a case of making sure that he's ready for 10 days time or just over 10 days time. I think Tadhg Byrne has almost done enough. I think if he comes off the bench tomorrow night and does well, he'll be in. I think Jack Conan has been super. I think the problem is that Jack Conan has is that Warren Gatland likes Faletau. Faletau's playing tomorrow night, and that's a player that if he plays really well tomorrow night, knowing that Gatland knows him, trusts him and likes him, that it might just swing him in his favour. But I don't think Jack could really have done a whole lot more. I think Ian Henderson has been really good as well. Obviously Connor Stark. I do think that one or both of Bundy and Robbie, I think the problem Robbie has now is that he really has to have a very impressive game on Saturday, and with that nature of that injury, you just hope that he's not pushing himself to try to get a test start, because he definitely was at the start of the tour. You thought Robbie, it was Robbie plus one other. So I think there are loads of Irish options to play in the test match, and I think the great thing from an Irish point of view is how well they've all played, and what is no crowds. You know, it's not a normal Lions tour in terms of the way they've had to be isolated and be away from everything, and the fact that they're all mentally so strong to produce the performances they have, I think is brilliant from an Irish point of view.
Yeah, and there could be some more as well, with Ronan Kelleher potentially set to join up with them as well after his super performance at the weekend.
Yeah, I think it'd be great for Ronan. I think the good thing about that is what we talked about earlier with being a young guy and what an experience for him, but I do think he would be the next hooker, in my opinion, that should be going anyway. So that's a different story to the Marcus Smith one, and it would be brilliant. I thought he was incredible at the weekend, and you know, it's hooker scoring four tries is basically unheard of.
Unless you're Keith Wood.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Anyway, Rory, thanks a million for taking our call. We hope tomorrow night is a cracking game, and enjoy your rest of your evening. We're going to take a quick break.
Game on.
2FM with Green Farm. Fuel your day with Green Farm's new high protein cooked chicken breast fillet. 100% natural and packed with flavour.
Game on 2FM.
Now it is almost half time in the Newtown Dundalk game and still nil all there, but it is time for us to do the FAI Cup first round draw. And as I mentioned earlier, former footballer, Paul Corrie is with us to draw out the teams. Each club has been assigned a number ahead of the draw, with 32 teams in the pot, including every SSE, Airtricity, Premier and First Division team, and 12 non-league clubs. All first round fixtures are set to take place on the week ending Sunday, July 25th. So Paul, give us a rumble of the balls there. Paul is going to draw out the balls here live in studio, and Ruby and I will call out the teams.
Before we start, Marie.
Yes, Ruby.
How do you pronounce number 26?
20, St. Moctas.
Grant.
Right, we're all set. Come on, Paul, who's first out?
Number 13.
Number 13 is Fairview Rangers, based in Limerick. Knocked Athenry FC out on penalties to qualify.
Number 14.
Number 14 is Finn Harps. Won one title in 1974 and lost a three-game final to Bray Wanderers at Talca Park in 1999.
Number 32.
Number 32 is Wexford, currently bottom of the First Division with only one win all season.
And they will play...
Number 5.
Number 5, Cabinteely, the team that nurtured Derby County's Jason Knight.
Number 11.
Number 11 is Drogheda United, have played in four finals and only tasted victory once back in 2005.
Number 10.
Number 10, Derry City, have won the five FAI Cup finals and lost five, most recently in 2012. We do have a lot of teams to get through, but Paul is doing a great job
number
here.
Number 18.
18 is Liffey Wanderers, one of Ireland's oldest football clubs, formed in 1885 on Pierce Street in Dublin.
Number 6.
They will play Cove Ramblers, Cork Bayside, currently competing in the First Division.
Number 29.
29 is UCD, won the FAI Cup once before back in 1984.
Number 23.
So they will play Shelburne, have lost the most finals, winning 7 and losing 11 times, currently top of the First Division.
Number 9.
Number 9 is Crumlin United, Dublin side famous for developing Robbie Keane.
They will take on...
Number 26.
Number 26, St. Moctas, based in Clonsilla in Dublin.
Number 16.
Number 16 is Killester Donnycarney, beat Oliver Bond Celtic 2-1 in the last round to progress.
Number 30.
Usher Celtic, based in Dublin 8, established in 1943. And if anybody wants to send us in their thoughts on the draw, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Number 25.
25. St. Kevin's boys, notable alumni include Damien Duff, Jack Byrne, Robbie Brady and Dara O'Shea.
Number 17.
Number 17 is Kilnamana AFC, just up the road from me, Dublin-based club formed in 1978. They thumped Home Farm 5-0 in the last round.
Number 24.
24, Sligo Rovers have five FAI Cup titles, the last one in 2013. Currently joint top of the Premier Division. Alan Call, you'll be happy with that. Or will he?
Number 8.
They will play Cork City, who have four FAI Cups to their names, most recently winning in 2017.
Number 7.
7 is College Corinthians, Cork-based side, the feature in the Munster Senior League.
And they will face...
Number 3.
Number 3, Bohemians, won it 7 times, last time in 2008.
Number 1.
Athlone Town suffered the largest defeat in the competition at the hands of Dundalk in 2020, losing the semi-final. We won't go there, I don't think.
11-0.
Number 31.
So 31 is Waterford. They have won the cup twice and also been runner-up on 7 occasions.
Number 28.
28. Treaty United, recently relaunched Limerick side competing in the First Division.
So Treaty United will face...
Number 12.
Number 12, Dundalk, who are the current holders and in action right now, and it is still nil-all in that game against Newtown, and it is just around the half-time mark.
Number 22.
Number 22, Shamrock Rovers, record of most FAI Cup titles with 25, currently joint top of the Premier League, playing later on tonight, and they will have a home game against...
Number 15.
Number 15, Galway United, who won the Cup in 1991.
Number 21.
21, Maynooth University Town dispatched Donegal's Bonnegie United in the last round to qualify.
Number 20.
They will face Malahide United, who play in the Leinster Senior League and had a bye into this round. Another team that Alan Cawley has interest in. Ruby?
He's a finger in every pie, definitely.
Number 27.
27. St. Patrick's Athletic, three-time winners, last won it in 2014. Currently joint top of the Premier Division.
So St. Pat's will play.
Number 4.
Number 4, Bray Wanderers, two titles in 1990, became the first division team to win the Cup, the first division team to win the Cup, and in 1999, the first team to win the Cup and be relegated in the same season.
Number 2.
Number 2, Bangor Green Hills Green Park FC, Dublin side based in the Leinster Senior League.
Bangor will play.
Number 19.
Number 19, Longford Town have two titles from 2003 and 2004 and currently are bottom of the Premier Division. So that is all of our fixtures. Well done, Paul Corry. An absolutely excellent job. I'm going to put you on the spot now. I don't know if you're able to take it all in, but who for you is, or which one for you is the standout tie?
One that I just jotted down was Derry and Drogheda. I'm not sure if that's one of the few all Premier Division ties, but Drogheda have been going very, very well this season under Tim Clancy and have surprised a number of people. And Derry have also put together a few decent performances, so losing one of them early on in the competition will be, I guess, a welcome proposition for other Premier Division teams, so that should be a tasty one.
Paul, Sligo Rovers in Cork City.
Yeah, that's the other big one that came to mind. When you said Alan Cawley, you'd be looking forward to this one. Cork is a difficult proposition. You know, they're not quite of the same strength that they were in previous years. The fact that Sligo are at home, you would have to fancy them. But Cork and their tradition and history in the Cup, they'll go up there and they'll by all means give it a go. But you would imagine Sligo will have too much for them.
Okay, well, those fixtures are scheduled for the week ending the 25th of July. So the teams that were drawn out first are the home teams, but venues will be decided in the coming hours and days. I'm going to very quickly recap these 16 fixtures. So Fairview Rangers are playing Finn Harps, Wexford, Cabinteely, Drogheda United, Derry City, Liffey Wanderers will play Cove Ramblers, UCD will take on Shelburne, Crumlin United will play St. Mochta's, Colester, Donnycarney will play Usher Celtic, St. Kevin's Boys will play Kilnamana, Sligo Rovers will take on Cork City, College Corinthians will take on Bowes, Athlone Town will play Waterford FC, it'll be Treaty United versus Dundalk, Shamrock Rovers play Galway United, Maynooth University Town will face Malahide United, St. Patrick's Athletic will take on Bray Wanderers and Bangor will play Longford Town. So that is all of our fixtures in the FAI Cup first round draw, and it is half time between Newtown and Dundalk, and nil all there. We're going to take a very quick break. Paul Corry, thank you so much, and I'm sure all the information on those fixtures will be decided in the coming days.
Game on 2FM with Green Farm. Green Farm's new cooked chicken breast fillets are 100% natural and packed with protein. Available in selected stores nationwide. Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It's time to turn our attention to golf. Shane Lowry's long-awaited chance to get the Defence of East Open title underway will go ahead on Thursday, and we'll see him go out in the marquee group alongside golf's newest major winner, John Rahm, and former champion Louis Oosthuizen at Royal St. George's. So John McHenry is with us on the line to talk us through all of the action. John, I know we've been talking quite a bit about how much Shane Lowry has enjoyed being the Open champion and how much he's looking forward to defending his title. Will he be able to do it this weekend?
Yes, I think he most certainly can. I think that the stats would probably say that it's unlikely, because I think there's only ever been two people to defend the Open Championship since 1960, and one of them obviously being Porter Carrington. But I think he's in good form. I think that this golf course demands an awful lot of maturity, good shot making skills, a lot of patience. And I think that really over the last number of years we've seen Lowry really mature into a champion golfer, and I think that there's nobody in this field who he'll fear. He probably, believe it or not, is actually playing with a lot of the favourites there. John Rahm would be a strong favourite probably for the title, and Louis Oosthuizen I know will be well backed to win it as well. He's in good form, so he's playing with some good company, and hopefully they will spur him on to great things over the coming days.
So, John, tell us about Royal St. George, or Sandwich as it's known. What kind of a course is it?
Well, I think that the little things that you will actually probably notice more than anything else, it's a very flat golf course. It is crown fairways, so it's very, very difficult to hit fairways. You'll see a lot of balls pitching in the middle of the fairway and rolling off on either side into the semi-rough. Now, I know they've widened the fairways. They've also widened the green. So big green, big, large surrounds, so very tight lies. So you're going to see a lot of very innovative shot-making skills. But it's a tough golf course. Over the last while, par really has only been broken three times, I think, by the champions over the last while. So, you know, it's going to be a very tough test of golf. It's going to demand a lot of patience. The likes of the bombers, the Sambo and all that, there'd be no advantage in bombing the ball a long way. If you're not on the fairway or just in the semi-rough on this golf course, then you're not going to be counted, because you just simply will not be able to control the ball. And while DeChambeau may have all the strength in the world, if he's out of position and in this heavy rough, which is lush and very heavy, then I think that he has little or no chance.
John Rahm alluded to it on Sunday in an interview after the Scottish Open about the humps and bumps on the fairways and how hard it is to stay on them, and how the bounce you get dictates a lot of what's going to happen. Do you think John Rahm, even going in there this week thinking that way, has a slightly negative mindset before he even goes there?
Well, I think, Ruby, you just look at it, he's a wonderful driver of a golf ball. He's very accurate. He's a strong iron player. He is the in-form player. He's won the most recent major. He also has good pedigree over Lynx golf courses. We know he's won twice in Ireland, in Port Stewart and in La Hinch. So I actually think that, as long as he can stay patient, we know he's a fiery character, and the likes of Lynx golf courses, they will test your patience infinitely. You can hit perfect shots, we know, and the ball can roll anywhere. And until you accept that, but I think that Rahm himself understands that. And I think that if he carries his form in, then I think he can pull out an iron, or he can pull out a three wood, or he can pull out a driver, and hit it into the right positions. And I think he'll make his fair share of putts. So for me, he would be the favourite going into this tournament, and I think that he understands the golf course, which is probably the most important thing.
I was always a fan of John Rahm, but listening to him in his press conference today, talking about his club foot and what he had to go through as a kid, just gave me a whole different level of respect. So for anyone who didn't hear it, he was born with club foot on his right leg, which meant that right up to, from his right leg up to the ankle was straight. His foot was 90 degrees, turned inside, basically upside down. So when he was born, they had to break pretty much every bone in his ankle, and he was casted within 20 minutes of being born, and then every week he had to go into the hospital and get recasted. So from the knee down, his leg didn't grow at the same rate. So to be able to achieve what he has with very limited ankle mobility, it just shows how determined he is as well, John.
Oh, absolutely. And I think, look, he's a very short, compact swing, and I'm sure that probably is attributed to, some of the trials and tribulations with his feet. But I think that I think nobody would doubt his pedigree. I think he has burst onto the scene. Obviously he was the world's number one amateur before he turned professional, but I think he actually has taken the professional game by storm. And you know, I think he's proven time and again that either if it's in Europe or if it's in Ireland, when he's on form, very few people play as aggressively as he does. Very few people make as many birdie opportunities, and we know that he's a clinical finisher, as we saw just recently, really, with the US Open.
Yeah, and you can see how he battles back. And remember, his shot on the ninth, was it, that hit the tee box or the back of the stand, and away he went to win that. But John, when you look at Open Championships, you remember the first in Royal Port Rush, Rory McIlroy lost his ball. Here in 2003, Tiger Woods lost his first ball off the first here as well. The pressure of an Open is incredible on the players, isn't it?
It is. You know, I was lucky to play in one in Muirfield, and you know, you're playing the practice rounds, and you know, you're just looking at a large field. Obviously, it's very well manicured, but it's tight fairways and so on. But once the crowds start coming in, and they really come in very close to the edge of you know, more or less to the edge of the fairways, it just becomes claustrophobic. And you know, when you're playing well, you feed off that energy, but when you're playing poorly, it just feels like that it's impenetrable almost. And you know, like, we've seen Tiger plenty of times hit some poor opening tee shots, but on holes like this, and particularly the first hole here in Sandwich, it's one of the toughest golf holes that's out there. So it's going to demand a lot from the players, but I think more than anything else, it's going to be the player who, and we've seen this time and again, you know, Darren Clarke won it, you know, 10 years or 11 years ago now at this stage. I think he was probably, you know, ranked in around 120th in the world at that time. Ben Curtis won it and wasn't even in the top 500 players. So it's players who bide their time. It's players who stay in the hunt right to the death, and you know, it can come calling. And I think that, you know, I would expect this is going to be a very tight event. It's going to be closely fought. But I think the players who remain patient and hit the mature shot, sometimes forfeiting a pin position, you know, just to simply keep themselves competitive, I think that they'll be rewarded.
Six of the hardest holes in this course are in the front nine. So yeah, when the players go out there, they just kind of mind their way through the first ones. But then the seventh, they all look at the seventh hole and think it's the easiest hole in the course, par five. We need a birdie there. And do you look at holes that kind of way, that I have to get a birdie at that one, and par does me everywhere else?
Yeah, look, I think probably you'll see over the opening rounds, you'll see quite cagey golf from players. You know, Rory has talked about using a driving iron quite a bit this week. I think over the first round, certainly, you would see people trying to position the ball and trying to actually just keep themselves in or around par, which would be a very good score. I think as the competition opens up, I think people will start gambling a little bit more, and will see angles that maybe others don't, or angles that will suit their own game style, and they'll try and execute accordingly, you know. But what these fairways will not do is they will not reward accuracy necessarily, because you can hit the ball down the middle of these fairways and they're crowned, and it's a little bit like a sausage top. They'll move from one side to the other side, and you know, who knows what the lie will be at that point. But having said that, you know, the inner around these greens, if you've got a good, strong long game, and you know, I think you'll probably see the three woods being reintroduced, or the five woods being reintroduced from around the edge of the greens, you know, for these long putts and so on. But if you're mastering your short game this week, you're going to be very, very competitive. And that's what we've seen on this golf course time and again, is that the guys who are creative short game players, who are the really strong putters, are the guys who come out on top.
So who are those guys then?
Well, John Rahm would certainly fit into that category very strongly. You know, Jordan Spieth, you know, would be, in my opinion, a good, strong contender. Dustin Johnson is another person, I think, who has had form on this golf course, you know, and I think that if he can show a little bit of form this week, we'll have fond memories and knows how to kind of get thereabouts. You know, he was run up to Darren Clarke the last time around. We have Louis Oosthuizen, as I said, and we have our own Shane Lowry. You know, I mean, probably further field, Matt Fitzpatrick, I think, is somebody who's trending nicely. But I think that realistically, this golf course is going to beat these players up, and that you just have to be very, very patient.
How do you think Rory is going to cope? We saw him up close and personal at the Irish Open and saw him struggle for quite a bit of it. He's headed over to Sandwich earlier than planned to do a little bit of work on the course. Do you think he's going to be able to step up?
I don't know for the following reason. I think he's openly spoken about some concerns he has in his game. I think he's shown a mental frailty that we haven't seen before in him. We know he's working with Bob Rotella, which I think is something that's long overdue. But having said all of that, everything seems to be rushed now at the moment for him. I'm speaking to some friends of mine who were watching him doing a bit of practice in Port Marnock, and they felt that he wasn't hitting his tee shots well. And while, you know, he has the power to maybe take the driver out of the bag, we know that Rory's, one of his biggest weapons is his driver, and it's a little bit like his DNA. And if you take that out of his hands, I'm not sure how comfortable he is on a golf course. So, you know, mentally, I don't think he's at the races. But we have seen with Rory how quickly he can turn. He can find a small little thing and it will ignite him. I think that he has the game to win on this golf course. There's no doubt about it. But I just think at this point in time, mentally, I don't think he's at the races.
It's just hard to think of or watch somebody that's so talented not be at the races. I mean, he has it there. Surely,
absolutely, Ruby. Yeah,
surely there's a way of finding it, just even making it fun or simple for himself. He's one of the most gifted sports people on the island. You just think it's hard to imagine him not being able to do it.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, but you know better than most that crisis and confidence, you know, it just everything becomes difficult. And I think that, you know, at this moment in time, Rory's missing with his tee shots left and right. And I think that, you know, if he was missing just on one side alone, he could have a game that he could play with. But if he's stepping up there and he's missing on either side, then he's stepping up with no confidence. And his body language looks one of, you know, somebody who's just struggling at the moment. But as I said, there's no better man that if he can find some little chink that will get him through the week, something that will give him consistency off the tee box in terms of misses, then I think that he could be competitive.
Confidence is the ability to think in a positive manner in all circumstances, I feel. But when you look at the British Open, right? Darren Clark, Ernie Els, Phil Mickelson, Henrik Stenson, they all won in the last decade. They're all over 40. Does that maybe bring Darren Clark and Padraig Harrington into it? Could either of them have a chance?
Well, Padraig has got good form, you know, and I know he's been building for this one. You know, I think that his form is as good as it's been for a number of years. And we know Darren has been playing well in the Champions Tour. Phil Mickelson would be the guy, I think, actually, would be my dark horse for this because... I thought he won very impressively in Kiwa. He played on a Lynx tight golf course, albeit it was out in the ocean, you know, but there was quite strong winds there. So I think that, you know, Lynx golf courses by their very nature, they're fast rolling, you know, length, the prerogative is not length, it's not carrying the ball. So these guys have the experience in the case of can they get in there and then, you know, do they have the stamina to stay for 72 holes? The forecast this week is good, so I think we're going to see guys, you know, shooting out of the woodwork and, you know, posting some low scores early doors. Will they stay? Unlikely. I think the wise person would say, if I can post something in around 3 to 5 to 7 under par, I'm going to be very, very competitive, and I'll take my chances on the last day. And certainly, all of those have that ability.
Okay, John. In a word, who will win? Or two
I think
words.
John Rambo will win his second major championship.
Okay, John, thank you so much for joining us. Enjoy it. And tomorrow we'll be talking to Gary Murphy live from the course. Paul Curry, we have a goal?
Yeah, Michael Duffy, 1-0 Dundalk. It's come just after McElhenney had hit the post. So a fairly straightforward evening for Dundalk. Great that they can put a bit of consistency and back-to-back good results together. Finney Perth take huge confidence from that.
Paul, as an ex-soccer player, surely you play golf, do you?
I do a bit now. The left knee gives me a bit of a wobble.
Who
really
do you fancy in the Open?
I'm not sure playing golf is the best way to describe, and I hack around the course.
Same as me. Who do you fancy in the Open then?
I think Jordan Spieth of late has been really impressive in some of the competitions that I've watched, and that's not a huge abundance of it, but if I was having a little outside bet, that's maybe where I'd go.
Right, well, we will be covering that for the rest of the week. The Irish cricketers have claimed a historic win over South Africa in their second ODI in Malahide. John Kenny joins us with all the details. John.
Yeah, I'm just here at Malahide, a deserted Malahide. The Seagulls are picking away at some of the fans' leftovers, but Ireland pulling off a shock 43-run victory over South Africa, picking up 10 valuable World Cup points, led from the front by their man of the match, Andy Balburnie, their captain and leader, scoring a century. Ireland won comfortably. South Africa failed to chase down 290. Now, this morning, they decided, the South Africans that was, to put Ireland into bat. Ireland made 290 for five off their 50 overs. Balburnie, their captain, making a magnificent 102, his seventh century for Ireland, and ably backed up by a 79 by 21-year-old Harry Tector and 45 by George Dockler. They gave South Africa plenty to think about and reply. Now, Ireland had South Africa two down for 51 in the 11th over, but the visitors rallied with Yanaman Malan and Razi van Dusen putting on 108 for the third wicket before both fell in quick succession. And then Ireland, well, they decided they're going to pile on the pressure. The South African runs dried up. Wickets fell steadily to give Ireland a famous win. Their first ever over South Africa in a one-day international, now full of confidence ahead of the final match of the series back here in Malahide on Friday. I've witnessed some great wins for the Irish cricket team down the years. The win against Pakistan back in 2007, the win against Bangladesh when they became an official ODI side, commentated on the West Indies match in 2015 at the World Cup in New Zealand when they probably their best ever victory. Just, but today is just a staggeringly good day for an underrated Irish cricket team who, remember, lost 3-0 to Afghanistan in the first set of qualifiers, 2-1 to the Dutch. They were down and out, it seemed, but now they've picked up 15 qualifying points in the last two games, and hopefully by Friday they'll pick up a series win. But a great day for Irish cricket, beating South Africa by 43 runs.
Well, John Kenny, in a deserted Malahide, thank you so much for joining us and looking forward to seeing how that next game goes. That is all we have time for, Ruby. You're saying goodbye to us?
I am saying goodbye. I'll be back next week. Tara's Chord is up next. Enjoy the rest of the week, Marie.